You are listening to episode 11 of season 9 of the GNU World Order. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu, and this is the GNU World Order, and this show is about computers and technology, and in particular, Linux and Unix and things like that. In this episode, we're going to take a break from all the Python that we've been doing, trying to start to break it off a little bit, because honestly, between you and me, the Python thing was just because I knew that I was going to start getting really busy, what with moving to New Zealand and all, and figured it would be nice to have something sort of rigid and structured to kind of hang on to while the rest of my life completely changed. So the change is kind of over now. That doesn't mean I'm going to abandon the Python lessons, but I do want to take a break from just reading off Python line after Python line and get in some other thoughts and observations about what's going on in the world of free software. So here we go. In this episode, we are going to discuss a couple of different things. We'll talk about what we all love so much about free software. We're going to talk about stability versus cutting edge, and we'll probably do maybe a quick Python lesson? I don't know. It depends on if we have the time. We'll see. Not promising anything, we'll just see. But next episode, we'll definitely go back to Python, so no worries. But for now, what we love about free software. I've done segments a little bit like this before. What I love about KDE, or what I love about this or that, and inevitably when you do a what I love about list, it becomes kind of people interpret it as a list of everything that you've got that no one else has got, and I find that lists like that are very rarely quite spot on. They tend to be things that, you know, for everything that you list, other people can kind of, in some way, find a way around what you've got and say, well, yeah, I mean, I've got that too, what's the big deal? So, and I don't think it's because everyone's got the same thing, I happen to think that lists like that focus attention very, very directly onto one thing, and then people can kind of finagle whatever they've got to match exactly what you have on your list. I mean, think about it. We do that. We do the inverse of that many times. You know, people will say, well, gee, I love such and such about this thing and this platform, this OS, and you sit there and you read it, and you know, I've got that. All I have to do is string this together and bring this other thing in, and I've got the same thing. And that's all well and good. And for that reason, I don't mean for this discussion to be a comparative list against anything else. I was simply reminiscing the other day about when I was very first time I was getting into Linux specifically, and the excitement and the sense of discovery that I had at that point, and how amazingly none of that has gone away. You know, and I think that's a common thread in a lot of Linux users and BSD users and you know, Unix converts, essentially. And maybe not even converts, maybe that's not even accurate. But there's this sense of consistent and constant discovery. And I say I think that's a common thread because if you look at DistroWatch, you know, DistroWatch, the website, I mean, their subtitle, their tagline is put the fun back into computing. I mean, that's a huge statement. That's a huge statement. And if you really, really think about what that's saying, and I guess I should be tipping my hat to DistroWatch for pointing that out, but if we really think about what that's saying put the fun back into computing, not put the fun back into using a computer or using computer programs. It's the fun back into the act of computing. And I know I'm getting all kind of, you know, picking these words apart, but I think it's significant because I can say that I've had fun on a computer, you know, playing this game or doing this task, but that's not the computer. That's the applications running on the computer that you are, you know, you're being creative with those applications, or you're tweaking something on that computer. But for free software where you can actually get in there and tinker, you're actually bringing the fun back into the act of the computer for computing's sake, I guess. And I mean, just I don't know who you are, what your background is, or why you're into computers. For me, and for a couple of other people I know, you know, I can recall, I remember being at, well, I mean, for a very long time, just kind of sitting back and then thinking, you know, what if there was a way for me to change the computer that's in front of me? Like, could I maybe somehow design my own operating system and really think about it differently? And I remember thinking about it differently. I had this one idea at one point a long time ago when I knew nothing about computers. I mean, I knew computers, but I didn't know anything about, like, you know, how they worked. Well, I knew how they worked, but I didn't know how to program and stuff. I mean, it's questionable whether I do now, which is why I'm teaching you Python. So I was thinking, and you know, I thought, well, what if instead of applications, we just had files, and when you opened a file, like the application was kind of embedded in the file, you know, kind of like this. I was trying to take everything and kind of turn it inside out, so that instead of being an application-centric thing, it was a file-centric thing, which ironically I think is exactly what smartphones do now in a way. You know, the file contexts are implicit, you know, which is why I hate them so much. So apparently my idea was a horrible one, but you know, you click on a file and it opens up in something that it thinks it should open up in, and it's very difficult to kind of get to your own data and say, no, this is what I want to do with this data, with this file. I want it to do this, you know. It's all very abstracted. Point being, though, that kind of creativity, that kind of desire to create your own environment was something that kind of hit home very early on for me. And I remember to this day when I first got into Linux, you know, looking at one of the early desktops, whatever it was, I don't remember if it was KDE or XFCE or what, but you know, just the ability literally to take the panel, like the kicker, and move it to the top of the screen or to the side of the screen or back to the bottom, like that was so exciting. That right there, the ability to take what I saw and to change it exactly to fit my whim. It's not even like my need. I didn't need it to be at the top of the screen. I don't need it to be at the side or the bottom or whatever. It's just, I feel today like having this bar elsewhere, and having the ability to do that as just a built-in feature of the operating environment that's in front of me. That was such an exciting thing, and I'm sure that there were exciting things like that for you, who knows, but the customization was a big deal. And that continued, you know, the desire to customize my computing experience so that it was exactly what I wanted. And again, not necessarily because it was what I needed, it's just what I wanted. Just my spur-of-the-moment whim, I wanted to be able to realize that. Because, I mean, why not? It's a computer. It's supposed to do whatever we want it to do. And it seemed, before Linux, it seemed so impossible, you know, and I'm sure that there are many people out there who have done similar things. You know, you turn to whatever scripting ability or visual programming environment your operating system offers you, or maybe it's something free that you find online, you know, and you turn to it and try to construct something, and it's just not there. It's not, you're not given the flexibility, and the you know, your operating system isn't well, you don't have access to half of the things. You can't really change things, and you don't understand why. It's just frustrating, and you assume it's because of you. It's because you don't know how to do it. And actually, it's just because the operating system is screwing you over. So discovering Linux, then, and this free software, and this creative ability to compute the way that you want to compute, I mean, that's a really, really big idea. That's a big deal, and I think it's one that shouldn't be underestimated. And I think in some ways we forget about that sometimes. We forget that that's a feature of free software that, you know, it may not appeal to everyone. I know that I've told people about that before, and they just kind of look at me like I'm crazy. Like, why would I want to change anything about a computer? It's kind of like, you know, raving, I guess, about being able to, I don't know, change the handle of your hammer from wood to have a rubber covering so that it doesn't, you know, doesn't hurt so much when you hit a nail, I guess. I mean, a lot of people just think, why would you do that? Just use the hammer as it is given to you. Which is hard for you and me probably to understand that mentality, because obviously if you're into Linux, you're probably not the type of person who would just accept whatever is given to you. So that is it's a difficult thing to see. But for the people who don't do that, for the people who won't settle for whatever's given to them, for people who want to take their experience and their environment and change it to their, again, just their momentary whim, Linux is a huge deal. It's very, very significant. And it's these little benefits. It's the benefits that are just because, that I think we sometimes overlook in favor of, I guess you could say, the more important benefits, you know, the things like, why is free software important? Why should it be free? You know, why should we own our own data and have access to our own data all of the time? And how computers are a big deal in the world today? All these, you know, very significant or very valid reasons for, yeah, software freedom. Sometimes we forget in light of those kind of idealistic reasons that sometimes the reason the code should be free is simply because it's more fun when it is. It's just, it happens to be a lot more entertaining for the user, at least users like probably you and me. It's better for us. It works better. That's it. So that's an important thing to remember. And I think sometimes persuading people with all the high ideals is a lot harder than persuading them with pure passion and pure excitement over what we have with something like Linux. Okay, and now, like a good drama or action movie or something, I'm going to suddenly switch pace and change the emotions on you and kind of take that excitement and scold it, actually. So I've been doing a little bit more activity on linuxquestions.org lately because my internet schedule is all different now. And I'm really not able to be on IRC during the day or in the evening or ever. I don't really have access to Jabber at this point. So my social online outlet for Linux-related stuff tends to be, at this point, Linux Questions, because that seems like a good place to go. Hopefully I can help people and kind of interact with other people, and it's cool. It's a good place to be. But the number of problems that I see on there that stem from this one particular thing, at least in my opinion, is really staggering. And I'm going to tell you what that one particular thing is, but I'm going to lead up to the reveal to keep you in suspense. So act like you're suspenseful, or you're in suspense, rather. I'm suspenseful, you're in suspense. So we have this one problem, and now I'm actually probably going to give it away, but maybe you'll guess it. But anyway, as you may know, you may not know, but if you know me from a couple of seasons ago, then you'll know that I used to be very excited about cutting edge software. It was something that, you know, I liked it. It felt dangerous. I liked living on the edge, never knowing if it was going to break or not. It was fun. It was an addiction. It was unhealthy. And that interest in cutting edge manifested itself rather conservatively in Fedora. Fedora is not, you know, what you would call bleeding edge, but it's pretty cutting edge. I mean, it's usually the first to have, I mean, that is what one of their mottos is, first, friends, and foremost, and things like that. So they're fairly cutting edge. I'm not saying there's, you know, I don't want to get into a discussion of who's more cutting edge, you know, Arch or Debian, Sid or Fedora. I don't know anything about that. All I know is that Fedora was cutting edge enough for me. It gave me a buzz. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was daring. And let's just say that as I've matured in my Linux usage, I have kind of gotten over that love of the cutting edge. I've felt its sting, in fact. So as I've, you know, at home, in the privacy of my own home, the cutting edge stuff, you know, it's not hurting anyone. Maybe I'll indulge in cutting edge here and there. A little bit of Fedora, just on occasion. Not a big deal. But I have found that in real life, like, when I'm trying to sit in front of my Linux computer and get things done and actually, you know, meet deadlines and really have a satisfying user experience, not a tinkering experience, but I need a computer to get something done. I need to edit audio or video, or I need to, program with libraries that I'm familiar with and which have not suddenly, you know, changed all the system calls out from under me or whatever. Those things, those activities, the idea of stability really, really became really, really appealing. So much so that I almost can't even remember the cutting edge kind of person of my Linux youth, really. Like, I mean, I used to run Fedora and Slackware Current, and I thought it was a lot of fun. And I respect that. I respect that some people find that fun. I do. I'm saying that I like stability. And I think that the cutting edge lifestyle comes with a cost. And I think that some people need to be protected from that lifestyle, from that cost, because they don't understand the cost. Okay, so if you haven't figured it out by now, what I'm trying to say is that one of the main problems I'm seeing online when people have problems with Linux, I'm going to throw out a number and just say 2 out of 4 times, that's 50% of the time, the problem could be solved with running a declared stable Linux distribution. That's a bold statement. I may be overestimating my numbers. I may not be. You can tell me what you think if you want, or you just tell yourself what you think, mull it over in your mind. But I'm talking about people running non-LTS versions of Ubuntu, talking about people running Debian testing, people running Fedora. Those are the ones, oh, and Arch. Those are the ones that come to mind. Those four distribution versions, or distributions, I guess, come up a lot online, not just on linuxquestions.org, but just in general, in my Linux support both in real life and online and on Linux questions and lots of different places. Those four come up a lot. And it's kind of astonishing at why people are running these versions of the distribution. Some of them just seem to be kind of, you know, computer people who are getting into Linux, and they asked on the wrong day at the wrong time, hey, everybody, what Linux distribution should I try? And a bunch of people said, oh, try Arch. Which, you know, I respect Arch. I've always respected Arch, but it is a rolling distribution, and it pushes out a lot of updates, and I know you can turn them off, and you don't have to do that, and you don't have to do this. A lot of people do, and the appeal of Arch is that it is rolling, and you get these updates. Same thing with Debian testing. You know, you get the latest code, and Fedora, you get the latest thing, and so we'll stay with those for a minute, because that's the group that those distributions particularly seem to appeal to, you know, the new Linux users who are pretty geeky and have been told Arch and Debian and I guess Fedora are really great distributions to try and to learn on, which I'm sure that's true. I'm sure it's very true that they're great distributions, and I'm sure you learn something on them, but in terms of giving someone a stable platform upon which they can build Linux knowledge, I don't know if those are necessarily the best. I don't know if they're the worst, but they're dangerous. They come with a cost. They're cutting edge. Now, the other group are the noobs who think that they're doing the conservative and safe thing and diving into Ubuntu, not understanding that Ubuntu proper is Ubuntu LTS, the long-term release. And so they end up getting, you know, whatever the latest Ubuntu is, which is like Ubuntu, you know, the ones in between the LTS. Ubuntu, if you look, because I did, if you go to their site and you start to download Ubuntu, the first choice that you're given is the LTS release. And then the second choice is the new stuff. And I don't know exactly how people end up with the newer one. I get, you know, if they see the number and they think, okay, well, do I want 12 or do I want 13? Well, I'll obviously go for 13 because it's newer, it's better. It should fix a lot of problems, right? You know, people don't understand what the difference between 12.04 LTS is versus 13.04 or 13.10, and they won't understand what 14.04 LTS means either. And it's shocking to me a little bit that Ubuntu allows for this confusion. I mean, for everything else that Ubuntu disallows, the one thing that they seem to do is just push out non-stable releases out there, which, I mean, it's crazy. It's nuts. And especially if you're a newbie-friendly kind of distribution, I feel like you should be pushing out and promoting and really encouraging the LTS version. I mean, look at Google. Google, what do? With everything they ever release, I mean, aside from dropping support for it 3 years later, everything they release, they call it a beta. I mean, Gmail itself was famously a beta for really most of its life. It only just recently became just Gmail, not beta Gmail. It's just Gmail now. So, I mean, Google does that. I mean, people don't look at its tag and say, oh, Gmail's in beta. I'm not going to use it yet. Obviously, that didn't work out so well for them. But, I mean, at least they have the sense to put that label on there. But Ubuntu doesn't even do that. It's just 13.10 or 13.04 or whatever. People don't realize that what they're using is software that really is intended to be bug tested, which obviously in an open source environment is normal and good and should be like that. But I really don't know if it should be right there for everyone to grab onto. Nor should computer companies that are selling laptops and desktops and things with, for instance, Ubuntu pre-shipped on it, they should not be shipping anything but the LTS version. I mean, unless someone specifically asks for the developer version or something, then go for it. Do whatever they want. But the LTS should be the default. And I think for a lot of people, some form of whatever you want to call it, LTS or stable or whatever, should really be your default. If you're reaching that point in your life, or your Linux life, where you need to get actual work done, then you want to go with stable. And I think that's undervalued in the Linux community, because we're geeks, and we get excited about the new software and the new programming and the new features. But you do have to temper that, especially if you're trying to get things done for yourself. You need to temper that desire for the shiny things and go for the old, boring, and yet stable things. But that's not all. You also, I think, need to encourage other people to go for the stable things, especially the new users. And by new, I may mean, like, for the first 2 or 3 years of your Linux life, go stable. Because, I mean, don't be mistaken that you can't, don't think that you can't learn Linux on a stable platform. I learned Linux on Slackware, and that's pretty famous for being stable. So you can learn a lot on a stable distribution. It doesn't mean that it's useless, or that you're not going to learn as much, or that it's too easy, or anything like that. It just means it's stable. It means that when you fire up an application, it does what it claims that it's going to do, and there are fewer bugs in it, ostensibly, than the ones in the cutting edge. And kind of, I think the way that you can see if you are at the point where you can graduate, if you feel the need to, from stable to cutting edge, is that if you're posting on public forums for help on how to make something work, then you probably shouldn't be using cutting edge. I mean, I realize geeks do that all the time anyway, but I mean, if that's your first line of defense, is, oh my gosh, I need help, then you aren't helping anyone by running cutting edge. You're not the beta tester that the developers need. You're not offering solutions. You're probably not offering stack traces. You're not testing anything. The bugs that you are finding, you know, you're not downloading the nightly builds of things and giving them the feedback that they need. You're just running cutting edge, and you're just shooting your foot in the foot. You're shooting yourself in the foot. And it doesn't make any sense to me, at least. I mean, you can argue with me on this if you think that I'm crazy, but if you're running cutting edge beta software, then you should have the capability of testing and giving good feedback on that beta software. Otherwise, you're just running beta software, and you're experiencing failures for no good reason. And I kind of sat down recently and tried to really think of, you know, stable distributions, and I realized that there are more than we realize, and I think it's, again, kind of a disservice to a bunch of people by not recognizing those and kind of pushing those to the forefront. And I'm a little bit almost disappointed in some of the Linux media out there, you know, such as it is, that we seem to promote so much of the kind of like the superficial excitement over things. You know, it's for some reason everyone thinks that you have to get excited whenever someone releases a new version of one thing or another, and no one really stops to ask why we're getting excited. I mean, I do, maybe you do, but a lot of people don't. It's just like sort of, there's a new release, everyone get excited. And yes, developers should get excited when their stuff is released, because that is cool, but everyone else can kind of sit back and wait for those kind of user/developers to figure all of the stuff out. And this happens in proprietary software as well. You know, it's just the public isn't aware of it. And I think that's the danger in just kind of blindly approaching all this Linux and open source stuff, not realizing that there's a division between like the users who are sitting at a desk getting stuff done, the users who are quasi-developers, and then the developers. And you have to kind of know which side of that fence that you sit upon. Are you on the side of the users? Are you straddling it with the users and developers? Or are you a developer? And if you're anything but that first group, then you should be running... No, if you're anything but the second group, the second and third group, in other words, if you're just a user trying to get stuff done, you should be running stable. And the ones that I can think of, really, are, I mean, obviously Slackware. Obviously Debian, which famously has a very long release cycle. So those are two great stable ones. But, I mean, even something like Magia, that doesn't get a whole lot of attention. OpenSUSE, that gets a fair amount of attention, but I feel like I ignore it frequently. And PC Linux OS, that's still out there. It's still running and kicking, and it's conservative. Linux Mint was used to be kind of one that I kind of thought of as stable, but I'm not even so sure about that. I think they're stabler than Ubuntu, but compared to the ones that I've just mentioned, Slackware, Debian, Magia, PC Linux OS, and Debian. No, I said that already. OpenSUSE. I feel like the other ones are. I mean, even Mint. I mean, I feel like it's a little bit more wild than those. But encouraging people to use those distributions, I think, is pretty safe. And one thing that I used to say was that getting people onto a popular distribution was smart. And I still see the appeal of getting them onto something that when someone says, what are you running on your computer, which never happens anyway, but when someone does mythically say that, that they'll be able to say, oh, Ubuntu, because it's got that marketing zing to it. Whereas if they say, oh, Magia, people will theoretically run away screaming. I see the appeal of that, but again, in real life, I don't know that that happens. And I used to think, okay, well, even if that never happens, then at least with Ubuntu, when they go on to some, you know, popular kind of, you know, website like lifehacker.com or you know, one of these like sort of lightweight geeky sites that, you know, they are aware that Ubuntu exists because, you know, and they write an article about it every now and again. At least, again, the user will see Ubuntu screenshots and Ubuntu this and Ubuntu that, and there'll be some familiarity there. And when they Google problems, they'll come up with Ubuntu, you know, answers because that it's out there. And yet, in my real life experience, I have found that people just don't really care that much. You know, I mean, Ubuntu in an article is Linux in an article. It's what if you've gotten them to the Linux trough, they're drinking the water already. That you've got them where you need them. You don't need to have them dressed up in Ubuntu clothes. And in terms of Googling, I have found that new users are new users because they don't know how to Google yet. They're not going to Google. They're going to ask you. You're the sucker who got them into it. You're going to be the sucker who bails them out when they hit a wall. So those are my thoughts on stability and cutting edge and how to guide people through the wonderful and exciting maze that is Linux. I do believe it's time for a cup of coffee. I'm going to have 2 cups of coffee. I invite you to do the same, one in each hand. And then we'll get back and finish up the show. Well, at this point, we could do a Python tutorial. But since we've been on a roll of just rambling about Linux and stuff, I think we're going to just continue on that, and we'll get back to Python in the next episode. So for right now, I want to talk about Shotcut. Have you heard of Shotcut yet? First of all, let's preface this with, where did all these video editors come from? When I first got into Linux, and that's not that long ago, I know I probably just said, oh, I've been in Linux for such a long time in the last segment, but I mean, really, in the larger scheme of things, I haven't been into Linux that long. And when I did, the Linux video editing situation was not that great. There was Cinelera, which was just not that good, in my opinion. No disrespect to the programmers of Cinelera, but I was not crazy about Cinelera. And there was Kden Live, which really wasn't that good at that point either. And then there was, I think, Kino was kind of like still around. It was kind of on its way out, I think. And that was kind of it. And people would keep throwing around stupid things like, oh, AVI Demux. AVI Demux is not a video editor. I mean, you can load a video file into it, and you can trim portions of it down and things like that, but that's not an NLE. That's something different. So it was a confusing and kind of dismal-ish place. And I mean, I used to do video editing on Blender. That's how dismal it was. Which, by the way, is a lot of fun. You should try it sometime. So now, it seems, I mean, well, about halfway through, you know, this story, Kden Live hit, like, if memory serves, it was 0.8. That was, like, for me, the watershed release. That was just it became really stable. That should have been its 1.0 release. I think I've said that before. It became very stable. It became just so featureful and so rich and a real pleasure to use. I use it frequently with lots of different kinds of media. Can't complain about Kden Live. I'm a big fan. And I still, to this day, try to keep defaulting to it. And I make myself sometimes not default to it because I want to try other ones out. But yeah, Kden Live, really, really nice. But then quite recently, really, I mean, like, really recently, within maybe this season of GNU World Order, or maybe as far back as the previous season, the video editing situation just became so much better. It felt like it kind of started with Kden Live getting kind of its very, very stable release, which, looking back now, I'm wondering if it wasn't really at the heart of it all. If it wasn't really just the media, the MLT toolkit, which now apparently stands for Media Lovin' Toolkit. I swear to you it used to stand for Mutton, Lamb, and Tomato, or something bizarre like that, I swear. But, or maybe Mutton, Lettuce, and Tomato? I don't know, but seriously, it had a weird, they had a weird title for that thing. But it was the MLT thing, and of course that's the back end. It's not the video engine, but it is the kind of the ability to shuffle around media back end behind Kden Live, and I'm wondering if that's what actually became stable, you know, at around the 0.8 time of Kden Live, but since around that point there were things like OpenShot, which used MLT on the back end, and it's a really nice application. Not really my style, but it's I can clearly and obviously respect what it has going for it. It does what it does quite well. And then there was, of course, Flowblade, which my friend Roji told me about, and I've really, really taken to it. I actually submitted a patch to Flowblade fairly recently. It was a thumbnail generation thing that had really heavy dependency upon something in GNOME, and I realized that it could be done with just pure Python, and so I submitted a patch, and I don't know if my patch was accepted or if something like it was rolled into Flowblade, but it changed. So that was cool. Flowblade was, again, MLT on the back end, Python front end. And of course there's Lightworks, which I've always been fairly hesitant about, and I still am, because I still don't see the source code. But Lightworks, I mean, you can't, you know, think of it, say what you will, I mean, it's a very, very professional level fairly, you know, corporate feeling, kind of like, oh, this is safe and almost proprietary kind of video editor that appeals to some people. And very, very lately, there is this thing called Shotcut. Now, Shotcut is by Dan Dennedy, who you may or may not recognize as the developer of Kino. So Kino was a big deal. From what I understand, I remember it being very, very nice, and I remember, I believe it was Dan's video on his screencast on how to use Kino, was just a really, really good screencast. He took into account basically every possible issue that you might encounter and kind of explained what was going on behind the scenes. I remember it being very, very good. And kind of one of those screencasts that influenced me and the assumptions that I made when doing technical support really did change that a little bit. So that was very cool. So Dan Dennedy apparently kind of, you know, killed off Kino because, I mean, DV kind of went away, like DV tape. That was no longer something that really was needed. And from what I understand, he did some work for Caden Live for a while, which is very, very cool to know. And I didn't realize that he did. But now he's doing something called Shotcut, which all of a sudden brings free, true multi-platform video editing to the world. It's amazing. It's got MLT on the back end, and there are downloadable binaries for Mac OS X, Windows, whatever, and, of course, Linux. So it's written with Qt, it's written with MLT, and it just works. It's brilliant. You have to try it. Go download it. Shotcut, I think shotcut.org probably. It's a really, really nice application. It's in heavy development, so it's nothing that I would rely upon yet, but if you want to take a look at it, please do. And if you don't want to take a look at it, go to the site and look at the site. It's amazing. I mean, it's the holy grail of video editing, in that it is free software and it is multi-platform, totally cross-platform. This is a big deal. I think it's a long time coming. For so long, video editing has been splintered by platforms. You've got, you know, editors that will work on only one platform. You've got editors that work on two of the many platforms. You've got editors that work on another platform. It's just, you know, there has never been a video editor that will work on all three platforms, aside from Blender, which really isn't a video editor, right? It's a modeling and animation software, but even the video sequence editor, I mean, it really expects an image sequence rather than video files. I mean, that's really what it expects. So it's not really a video editor. And certainly, even if you stretch it and say, yes, it is a video editor, which I'm okay with, it's not a traditional video editor. If you say a video editor to most people, then they expect certain features, and Blender just does not have those features. So that was the only exception. That was it. That was the one editor that would work across all three. And then there was Lightworks, which kind of promised that it was going to be three, and it apparently is going to be three, and it may, I haven't checked lately, maybe it is up to three now. Maybe they have a Mac beta out. But I mean, all of a sudden, Shotcut exists, and it just is. It's all three platforms. Download it today, launch it, use it, done. Really, really amazing. And it's a nice application too. It's not one of those applications you'll download and think, you know, well, for most users it'll be fine. No, it's not like that. It's a really nice video editor. It's got a lot of cool features. What I've done with it, which admittedly hasn't been a whole lot. I mean, I haven't given it a run for its money yet, but what I have done in it has been fine. It's been working quite nicely. So, yeah, I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. Like I say, it's in heavy development, so caution is advised. Do not go download it and start using it with any expectation that you're going to work quickly and be done reliably. I mean, something could happen. If you need to get stuff done, use something that's been around for a while. But this is really nice. Shotcut is very, very nice. You should absolutely check it out. Support the project by any means that they need. I don't actually think he's asking for any support right now, but be there for him if he needs it. It's a great project. It will impress you greatly. And it's fantastic now, in my opinion, that we have so many great video editors for Linux. I mean, it really is. We've got editors for different styles of workers, for different levels of expertise, for lots of different things, and it's fantastic. I don't see this as a bad thing at all. And I know that a lot of people think, oh, well, with so many different developers working on so many different things, and I mean, long ago I thought the same thing. I thought, why don't all the developers just get together and work on one thing and make it really great? And you know, that's just not how the world works, and it's not how software works, and it doesn't need to be how software works, and it shouldn't be how software works. If someone wants to try their hand at writing a video editor, they should be able to try their hand at writing a video editor. They shouldn't have to sign up with an existing project. It doesn't make any sense if you really think about it. Everyone's a free agent. They should be able to do whatever they want to do. And just because they're working on their own video editor, that doesn't mean that they're taking anything away from another video editor. So it's okay that we have multiple video editors. I think it was more painful when we did have like all these little incomplete video editors lying around. That hurt because it was, you know, you kind of felt, why don't they just all get together and make one already? And I don't know. I'm not sure what changed. You know, I don't know if MLT just got good enough for everyone to use, or if there just became kind of like a sort of a critical mass of everyone needing video editing at last. I don't know what exactly changed, but it changed for the better, and now we have video editors all over the place, and they're really, really good, and they can do everything that you would want to do on any other platform. It's not even a question anymore. It just isn't. Of course, there's still going to be the desire for clones. You know, I can't use this, I can't use that, because it's not exactly the same as whatever I'm used to. And, you know, there's no way around that. When someone pulls that card out of the deck, I mean, that's their opinion. That's their requirement to try something new is that it's not new. And that's, you know, that there's nothing you can do about that, and there's no real amount of convincing them otherwise, except without, I guess, a flashy marketing scheme or something. But it's okay, you know, if they don't want to try it, they don't have to try it. We, who do want to try it, have lots of different options. They're really, really strong offerings. There's a different style of editor for every different style of editor, so take your pick. Flowblade, Shotcut, OpenShot, Kaden Live, they're all great. Take them for a spin. I think that is it for this episode. So thank you very much for listening. You can find me online at GNUWorldOrder.info or at SlackerMedia.info. You can email me anytime, klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's FSF as in Free Software Foundation.org. And finally, you can find me at linuxquestions.org as not klaatu. Thanks for listening, and I will talk to you next time.
Pretty optimistic, aren't you, trying to hitchhike on a road like this?
Oh, no, no. That thought never entered my mind. Fine.